Betty?
Here.
Christina Mendez?
Here.
Rebecca Lee?
Here.
Robert's in Germany, so he's absent. Maria Pipa?
Here.
Me, and John Nixon. Great, okay, so thanks everybody, welcome back. What's in the big box?
Dinner.
Dinner. Okay, so the first thing I wanted to do is I just want to alert us to some changes that we're going to make to the agenda tonight. There's small tweaks, but given, once we posted the agenda, the feedback that started to come online and the questions that people had, we're going to shift the order so that I think if we address the RFP question earlier in the agenda, I think it'll help us. So what's going to happen is if you look at the back of, if you go to page 2 of the agenda, what we're going to do is item number 5, which is next steps in the RFP process, we're going to move that up front. And then from there, we'll talk about the additional public benefits, and then we'll move on to the presentation around the revisions to the RFP parameters, okay? The other thing I want to say about tonight's meeting is that our intention in the design of tonight's meeting is to, if you can take a look at the time allocated for the various elements, the additional parameters is the last principle for us to cover, which we didn't get a chance to cover in the last meeting because we continued on with the other principle that we, and now I'm having a blank with the principle we covered, so that we could allow enough time for it. So that's what we're going to cover tonight first. And then the second thing is that, as you'll see from the agenda, the item which has the most significant amount of time is the feedback about the existing RFP parameters that have been updated based upon the feedback from the community. And I know that a lot of people have feedback on that. I'll say a little more about that when we get to it, but just to let you know that the real focus of tonight's meeting is really to hear from the community. And this is significant for us in terms of our role as a CAC. I'm kind of looking at everybody trying to make eye contact to say that our goal tonight is really to hear everybody's feedback. And then part 2, we'll have a chance to respond more at our next meeting. So from there, let's turn it over to Ash. Oh, and then the one last thing is that Lee, who is doing such a great job doing our closed captioning so that everyone can participate, we didn't let her have a break last time, which was really horrible for her. So at 7:30, we will take a 15-minute break from 7:30 to 7:45. So we'll stop the meeting and then we'll get back, let her take a little rest, get caught up, and then we'll continue with the agenda. Thank you, Lee, for your service. So with that, let's first talk about the next steps. Oh, actually, excuse me, the minutes. So the request was made last time that people needed to have printed copies of the minutes because they weren't able to download them. So we were able to print out the copies. They're here. I know that we had some people that submitted comments via email to us around edits to the minutes. So what I'd like to do is we're going to go through the minutes one set at a time. Can we all three at once? Let's do one set at a time because I think it'll make it easier for people if there's different people from different meetings. So let's start off with the November 5th minutes. And to my colleagues, does anyone have any edits or changes to the November 5th minutes? So no comments from my colleagues. So I'd like to ask our community members, does anyone have any feedback to the minutes of the meeting of November 5th? And again, as our protocol, your name and your neighborhood. Francine LaFrona, Westwood Park. And can you actually speak a little more articulately?
Francine LaFrona, Westwood Park. My comment was addressed to
what page?
Page 2 of 17. The comment was put on record in quotes, but this comment that the CAC to play by the same rules of respect as expected of the attendees. My comment was actually much more comprehensive than that, and that is not what I said. So I would like to give you the comment.
Sure, please do.
I have to go through my notes now.
Sure.
Okay. I will come back to that.
Any other comments for the meeting minutes for November 5th? Okay, so so my recommendation is to make a motion for these to include Francine's comment, which she's going to get back to us on, or we can hold off until Francine. Do you want to?
I probably can find it.
You can probably find it. Okay, so why don't we?
We can move on.
Why don't we go to November 30th and we'll come back to it?
Okay.
So now we have the meeting of November 30th. Any comments? No. Okay. I'm just checking because we had several people who provided us feedback to the minutes via email, and I just want to make sure we incorporate those as well.
No, I'm just asking if you made a hard copy. I didn't make a hard copy.
Okay. So while we look for that, does anyone have any feedback that they want to provide to the November 30th minutes?
From District 11. So on page 9, I think this is one of the general comments. So the comment that was taken from me was, reverse priority of principals, performing arts center needs to be constructed. What are you asking for and who are you talking to? That makes no sense to me if I were reading it. And I actually had to go to the audio to see what that was all about. For instance, I talked about the principles and parameters that AJ had mentioned and who the obligation is for. It shouldn't be for the community, it should be for this project. And then I talked about who is City College talking to, and that many of the staff who are most important are gone, or were about to be gone. We have a replacement of one of those people. So saying, what are you asking for and who are you talking to, doesn't say any of this, really.
Sure. So would you just kindly tell me the edits that you'd like to make to the comment, and we can take your...
Can I just turn in?
Sure. Yeah, that'd be great.
This would be the best.
Where it starts with the double.
Great. Okay, so we'll take this in. Thanks.
Hi, it's Jennifer from Sunnyside. On page 7 of 10 at the bottom, I just wanted to mention that Jerry Nathy is spelled incorrectly and actually sent that correction and it did get incorporated.
So what college is it? Yeah. What's the correct spelling?
G-E-R-I.
Oh.
V-A-H-E-Y, said the word.
Great, yeah.
Found my notes.
Hold on 1 second. Do you want to respond to November 30th, or are you back to
If you want me to correct them, then
let me just go finish November 30th. Just hang out right here, because we'll get out in a second. Any other comments for the November 30th meeting? And do any other comments pertaining to the November 30th from the feedback of the emails? So Jonathan would like the summary read, do not grow up with access to a vehicle, millennials tend to drive. What he'd like it to say is more and more millennials are happy to live in the city with no cars when they are allowed, no parking. Since we're concerned about automobile congestion, the number of cars that new residents bring to the Balboa Reservoir absolutely should be limited. However, the number of car-free households should not be limited. Garfi households put far less pressure on the transportation system, therefore support Proposal 3B and support adding more housing units as long as the number of cars is capped. So that's for November 30th. And then I believe there was one other.
Aaron
submitted a very long set of his feedback on, and I don't know where. That went to the meeting level, yeah. And that was for the November 5th meeting. So we'll go back to that after we go to Francine. So, okay, so, yes, sir. Yes, Harry. November 5th.
Sorry, I found a couple of other things. One was on page 4. This is actually a comment from Charlie from Poder. He talked about the how his group had done outreach to various neighborhoods, Lakeview, the Ocean View, the Mission. He actually said the Outer Mission, and I think that's significant. That's on line 4 of that of letter H.
On page 4.
Which date?
This is.
Are you on the number 3?
Oh, let me have my phone.
Okay. All right. Hold on. All right. So let's. Okay. Let's look at the front page first. Hold on, Francine. November 30th, any other pieces of feedback to be edited? Okay, we're good. So, can we take a motion to approve?
Second.
Thank you, John. Second?
Second.
Second by Kate. All in favor?
Aye.
Aye.
Thanks, great. Thanks, everybody. Okay, now let's go back to November 30th. Okay, so the, November 5th. So, I'm sorry, now I'm confusing myself. Back to November 5th. So under my comment, page 2 is number 17, page 2 of 17, and I have the one comment there. Everything there is correct except for the part that says wants CAC to play by the same rules of respect as expected of the attendees. What I actually said was I respectfully ask the CAC play by the same rules of respect as they expect us to, as this sort of censure and personal attack, intentional or not, seeks to shame and silence important inquiries and opinions. And I want to include that the way I said it, because I think it's important. I think many of us have felt silenced here. So I'd just like to make sure that record reflects.
Sure. And you know, would it be possible, could we take a picture of her comments so that
sure.
way we can get it exactly? That would be a great way to capture that. Thank you. Thanks, Francine.
Thank you.
Okay. And then, other feedback for November 5th. Harry, did your feedback on November 5th with the outer?
That was the December meeting.
It's a December meeting. Okay. All right. So anybody else have comments that they'd like to provide for November 5th? So I'm not going to go through it because it's in great detail and Aaron's not here tonight. He submitted 2 pages of edits to his comments. So I'm just going to accept them from his email, as he has noted, okay. So with that, can we make a motion to approve the minutes of November 5th? So moved by John, second.
Second.
Second by Howard, all in favor?
Aye.
Thanks, okay, minutes passed. Okay, now we go to, where's the last set? Is that it? Are we only doing 2? I thought it was
14.
Monday the 14th, yeah. Monday, December 14th. Okay, so the last set. This is a thick one.
Here. Oh, yeah.
It's a pretty deep, it's a pretty thick one. Does anybody have my fellow CAC members? Or does anybody have any feedback to December 14th? Okay, so now let's open it up to our community. So Harry, I know you had one. Anyone else have any edits they'd like to provide? Please come on up. So on page 4.
At page 4.
Fourth line.
fourth line of Charlie, letter H.
Yep.
So the Lakeview, the Ocean View, the Outer Mission. And then two lines later, we talked to Filipino Black, and we engaged them around community planning decision making. What he said was, we engaged them around affordable housing, comma, community planning decision making. So why affordable housing was left out of this discussion on affordable housing, prospectively, I don't know. So
it's a lot. Well, I think it's, if you take a look at the tone of the entire document, it's a ton of minutes to type. I think it was probably.
It's not a transcript. It's
right. It's the minutes. Yeah. So thank you for noting it.
Yeah, I think it's kind of important. And the next page is my colleague. This also may be in the nature of details. So
which letter?
I'm sorry. This is they don't have the same concerns we do in letter I.
Daniel
LeBrecht. The fifth line from the bottom. They don't have our voice. They don't have the same concerns we do. For decades, is those two words were left off. And then also I know she said for way too long.
Yeah, which I'd respond to.
Maybe you can just submit the third one.
Yeah. But I would like to have, if everyone wants to hear it, I want to make sure that we do a good job of representing. Yeah. So Harry, do you have this written down? Do you have your notes written down on this?
It's not clear from my notes exactly what that was. Let me just send you that one.
Okay. So about for way too, where does for way too long belong? I know that sounds kind of weird. Again, you know, I think here the other thing to think about is if you read this passage, does this passage represent, especially if we've added the four decades, does that cover the sentiment that this has been going on for a long time?
A long, long time. Yeah, so that's,
yeah.
That's it. Okay, then in my own comments on page 5, line 3, I said it was a WACS barrack, and I was in error. It's a WAVES training facility. This is also one that I've made a submission.
Great.
So should I just
turn it in? That'd be great.
See, on line 8, I understand the PUC develop needs, and it's sort of, I understand the PUC developed PET, PED rather.
Yep, versus develop, okay.
Yeah. There's some line that said should be exploding.
Is it right after this whole area is exploding? Is it in the very last one? On the same page at the very bottom.
Thank you.
This whole area, period. So when the PUC declared the land surplus in 2012, would it be right there?
Oh, the, I think the land use of the, the need for the land exploded. There it is. It's in the fifth line. They were given to the college as college was really exploding. Nobody exploded the college. It really exploded. since it was exploding, since it was established in 1940.
Thank you. Any last edits to our minutes? Okay, so can we take a motion to approve?
So moved.
Thank you, Howard. Second? Second by John. All in favor?
All right.
Great. Okay. All right. Thank you, everybody. Okay, so now we're going to move to our shifted agenda. So for those of you who came a little bit late, just to give you context, we're actually going to talk about the RFP process itself first, since there was a lot of feedback online going into that. We thought if we covered that first, it'll help set a better frame of context for the remainder of the agenda. Okay, so Mike?
Thank you. Good evening, everyone. My name is Mike Martin. I am with the City's Office of Economic and Workforce Development. With my colleagues from the Planning Department, we're helping to manage the CAC process. As the Chair mentioned, there were a number of questions, both sort of after the meeting last time and on email since the last meeting, talking about sort of how these development parameters that we're working on here fit in with the process of actually getting to a project, and sort of where we are in relation to things like the California Environmental Quality Act and those kind of evaluations of environmental impacts. So today, what I'd like to go through is a pretty short presentation to sort of give a sense of, first of all, what we've been working towards in this process in terms of the competitive solicitation or the RFP that we've talked about, and then sort of putting that in context in relation to both the future environmental review, as well as further community engagement in this forum and in other forums going forward. So this is a timeline, again, sort of breaking down some of the broader timelines we've shown going forward. We are where the star is, the CAC meetings to advise the RFP. We are working towards an RFP to select the developer through a competitive process, and I'll talk a little bit more about that in a moment. Then from there will be a series of other processes before we get to approvals, and this estimate is 2019, so several years from now. Throughout that time period, as you see in the block at the bottom, the CAC will be meeting to advise on the continued work on what we're talking about here. So again, there's a number of months and years of further community process, but we wanted to show you where we are now and how we build from here. So, can we take that flag down? So, for those that haven't heard this spiel before, I wanted to sort of go back and sort of define again what we mean by RFP. It's basically a shorthand for a competitive process. So we're seeking a developer partner to partner with the city and design a project through a community process. And to get to that selection, we're going through a two-step process. The first step is called a request for qualifications, and that is summarized here. And it's the initial step, and it's intended to reduce the field to a group of proposers demonstrating familiarity with the proposed project type and an ability to deliver that project in the way that we are negotiating and defining it through this community engagement. The responses to the RFQ will include a general narrative of the responder's project approach relative to the development parameters developed in the CAC process. That won't be a detailed, this is what it looks like, or this is how we'll do it, but we want to attach the development parameters we're working on here with the CAC today, because we want the developers to really think about how they're going to approach the challenges we've set before them before they even get to the RFP process, where they give the details about what they're trying to do. So the RFP process is the second step, a request for proposals. Basically, the RFQ will culminate in a shortlist of proposers that have the qualifications and have demonstrated their understanding of what we're trying to achieve here. And at that point, the shortlist of developers will submit a much more detailed project plan for final review and ultimately a selection of one of them for negotiations with the city. I want to be clear, as we have throughout this process, the responsiveness to these development parameters we're developing with you through the CAC process and the provision of fair market value to the SFPUC as the landowner as required under the city charter are really the ways that a developer can show that they are the one that's to be selected for this project. So,
Mike, can I offer something?
Sure.
So, for example, for the first step for the RFQ, if a developer who has absolutely no experience doing anything around green aspects or sustainability, they would not make it. They would probably not make it to the shortlist if that was something that we have in our principles that we say we want. So, I'm giving this as a hypothetical, but the idea being is that if the developer doesn't have experience doing, they can't address that aspect of what we have put forward in the principles, they probably will not make the list.
That's correct. It'll be a competitive scoring against their relative abilities to do the full range of things we're talking about. I do want to add that some developers may decide to join together in joint ventures, such as a nonprofit housing developer could be developing a standalone low-income affordable housing building on part of the site, and they partner with a developer that has more experience on the infrastructure part of the effort, and also sort of inclusionary housing with a mix of other incomes as well. So it's not going to be necessarily a single developer, but the team is going to have to show competencies to actually be able to do the things that are laid out in the development parameters. So we wanted to just, apologies for the texty version of this, but we wanted to just go through a step-by-step summary of where we are and where we're going. And I want to explain before I walk through this bulleted list that the tan type, the whitish brown bronze type, those are places where the community will have an opportunity to engage directly on what's happening. And the dark type are sort of the milestones that are being reached more generally with the help of that community engagement. So we're starting with CAC meetings. Our goal, as everyone here knows, is to complete a set of development parameters with the advice of the CAC and the issuance of the RFQ, RFP that I just described, to have developers compete to show that they can achieve the things we're talking about here. Ultimately, what we'd like to do during the RFQ, RFP process is have that short list of final proposals present here at the CAC before they're scored so that the community can see them, the community can provide feedback, the CAC can provide feedback, and all of that feedback will be summarized and provided to the team that's scoring the RFPs. It's challenging to have sort of the full community be able to participate. We felt like this was, frankly, something that hasn't really been done that much by the city in the past, but we feel like it's critical, frankly, to uphold the work we've been doing with the CAC here to sort of let people see that point in the process, how these proposals were able to address the development parameters. After the RFP is complete, and by the way, we're targeting that for summer 2016, that would be after that first round of RFQ qualifications, so we've selected the shortlist, and then once the developers have responded to the RFP, those proposals would then be presented here in a similar format as these meetings. After the RFP is scored and a partner is selected for exclusive negotiations, they would come back with a draft design proposal. So actual, the thing I think people here are hungering for, what do the buildings look like? Where are they situated? What does the park look like? And there will be a series of design workshops, probably not necessarily in this format of the CAC, probably separate design workshops, but I think we'd be continuing to come to this forum as well to talk about what that process looks like and how the CAC is involved. As that design becomes more refined through that process, then and only then will we get to what's known as the Environmental Review Process or the California Environmental Quality Act process, CEQA, a lot of acronyms on this part of the effort, but basically, every project, before it can be approved, must be analyzed for its impact on the environment. And we don't, all of the steps, the six or seven bullets before we even get to environmental review, are meant to create a project description. That project description is what's analyzed in the environmental review process. So we haven't even gotten to the point where there is a picture to look at. We are using this first step to actually make sure that we're baking in the right concepts early on, but until we get to that point, there won't be something that we can really analyze and say, how does this impact the environment? As many people know, there is a very specific and comprehensive regime for receiving public comments on the environmental review document. First, there's a notice of preparation that says, hey, we're going to start this process, and people can comment on what that process should look like. Then when there's a draft environmental review document, there will be public comment on that draft as well. Once that comment is incorporated and analyzed and responded to, that would get to a final environmental document, and if approved at the Board of Supervisors and the appropriate agencies, including the SFUC, there would potentially be a development and transaction agreement. So all of that would come sort of after the environmental review process, which is obviously not a short process. It's several months, years in the making. So I want to just try to boil this down a little bit to summarize, and these are, frankly, these are my shorthands, so they might not be the clearest in the world, but it helped me sort of think about how we're sort of sculpting down the work here. So this development parameters, I've used the term several times in past meetings, we're building the envelope within which the developers can take a look at this opportunity and think about what would really fulfill the things we're looking for and how they could do that within the envelope established in the parameters. Then once a project proposal is selected, we get to an initial design. The developers thought of, this is what we think it could look like. From there, we would go into additional design workshops that would first start sculpting that away based on community feedback and other input from the city and other stakeholders. And then we get to a project description submitted for environmental review analysis. That's a revised design. So we've gone from that initial one to one that's more in focus, that can really be analyzed for environmental review purposes. And then only then, after we get through that detailed environmental analysis, will we get to a project proposal that has been revised to mitigate those impacts as required by law, and has reached approvals by the city's elected officials and the people in the SFPUC and everyone else that has to sign off and say this can go ahead. That would be only at that point the approved project. So we've got several jumps to go before we get down to that piece. So I just wanted to summarize this, and then obviously I'm happy to answer questions as we sort of complete this item. The development parameter process, I want to emphasize, is providing an early opportunity for public input, and sort of by starting out from square one with what the community has worked with, or the CAC has advised on in terms of the community's desires with respect to this project. That is sort of the first principles that we're starting from. This is something that really generally doesn't happen. Usually we see, especially private projects, the first we see about what they're trying to build is when they apply to get their environmental review or apply for their permits. So this is a step back. I know people have been frustrated by the lack of detail, but we feel like it's useful to have this early dialogue so that the things that come later aren't out of the blue. The second bullet, affording the public an opportunity to receive presentations of the finalist proposals is similarly unusual, but as I said earlier, we think it's a really good way to tie together the work we're doing here early this year, and hopefully when we come back to the design workshops, we'll be able to sort of use that linkage to really hit the ground and understand what it needs to be improved, but otherwise why this proposal was selected. Then the last bullet, any project proposal developed through the community workshop and negotiation process will still be required to satisfy the requirements of the California Environmental Quality Act before it's approved. We're not short-circuiting CEQA, we haven't skipped CEQA, we're not there yet. So this work here hopefully will obviously start answering questions that usually are answered in CEQA, but give us more time to find better answers. That's really what we're trying to achieve. So I think that is the presentation. I don't know, Lisa, if you want to go to the committee or?
So yeah, so what I'd actually like to do is I'm gonna turn first to my colleagues to ask if there's any questions that you have based upon Mike's presentation before I open it up to the committee at large. Any other comments?
I just have a clarifying question.
So for those of us who, you know, usually deal with utilities issue and not housing and development issues, what typically happens in a design workshop? Can you just give us a flavor of usually what, you know, what kind of things people ruminate over? What is the day in the life of a design workshop?
Yeah.
Sue Exline with the Planning Department.
Who are you?
Did everybody hear that? Sue Exline with the Planning Department. So at this phase, I think when the developer comes on board, you would, it could be anything from a charrette where you can sit down, you know, get out your pens and paper and kind of draw, and you know, maybe they would present a design, or maybe they would ask you feedback. I think it can be kind of all sorts of things, but it's usually a hands-on sort of interactive session to work on the design of the proposed project.
Could it be more than one?
Yeah. I would imagine a series, actually, definitely.
I just had one question, and I'm sorry if I missed it, but with regard to, we're looking at all the parameters that are going to go into the ERQ, and so my understanding was that we would be having a view of the ERQ before it goes out, as well as the RFP before it goes out for input, and I just want to make sure that that's built into the process. And I'm sorry if I missed that step.
I'm going to let me.
So the actual body of the RFP that includes like city requirements and things like that, we're not planning to put into the public, in part because competitively we don't want any of the people responding to sort of get an early read on what that looks like. So we were using the development parameters to highlight the things that are important on the sort of community amenities side. We will put that verbatim to what you see here into both documents, but the rest of it, the guts, will not be part of this process.
I think it's more than community amenities. I think you misspoke, because the parameters address the various aspects of the project, right? So
sorry,
I think it's
the wrong charade.
Right?
Yeah. The idea is things that the components of a successful proposer are going to be interpreted through the development parameters we're talking about here, and those you will see in as you have been comprehensively.
Any other questions from colleagues? Okay, so let's open up to public comment.
This public comment is only about,
so right now the public comment is for this specific item. So if you have questions or feedback.
What item?
On the item we're currently on, which is what we just reviewed,
okay.
The process. Yeah, so the next steps with the RFP. So if you have a comment, you'll get in line behind.
A question.
Oh, a question too, either one. Yeah, just get in line, yeah. And again, state your name, your neighborhood, and either ask your question or statement.
It's a comment though, right?
Yeah, or questions, comments or questions.
Okay, great. Christine Hansen from the Excelsior. I think it would be really good for the community and for the panel as well if we could have a presentation on CEQA, you know, the California Environmental Quality Act. The process is complicated and it's kind of overwhelming for people. It looks by these slides as though it has been given kind of a little blip on the screen. And I think it would be very helpful for this presentation to be given not by asset planning, but by an independent environmental group, something that somebody that does this all the time, that works with CEQA. I know they work with CEQA from a certain angle. Somebody that is not likely to be involved actually in the project. It would be very good for the Citizens Committee to have a full and unbiased knowledge of CEQA and the rights that this community has in that process. I think it's super important. It's going to be overwhelming when it hits CEQA, and I've been through it. It's not fun, and it's just huge. Even if you hire a lawyer, they say, oh God, CEQA law is so different. I don't even know where to start. So getting as much information on CEQA now, while we're looking at permeable surfaces and things like that, I think is really important. Thank you.
Hi, I'm Kishan Baldovin from Western Park. Thanks for outlining the process and what we're looking into for 2016, 2017, and onwards. My question was more around the development parameters. We've gone through 6 months of working with the city, with the CAC, and looked at parameters. We've spent countless weeks, hours, nights, coming up with feedback. And I'd like to understand how many more meetings or iterations are we going to have about the parameters before we lock it down? Basically, at what point do we say we are done with the parameters?
Thank you.
I'm Max Ewald, I'm from the Gill side, and I just have a concern about this, the public workshops. It sounds like a great idea, but are we, the public, going to be part of that? And I just, I'm concerned about what people come to this and what we ask for. Is it really going to be listened to? I think this has been mentioned before, but because I just remember again the development over on Ocean Avenue, and I went to a couple of those meetings, and they had drawings that we looked at, and they said it's going to have this and that, and then it didn't, and I don't know what happened, and I'm really worried that that's going to happen here. And I'm concerned about the design of the buildings, because I'm seeing all these big boxy things going up on Ocean that are hideous. And it doesn't go in this neighborhood. It's ruining, it's changing the whole, they're not taking into any consideration the aesthetics of the buildings. They're just like boxes and cheap looking and crappy. And I'm scared, you know, and I live up on the hill there, and we have to look down on this, and it's going to turn into these big boxy buildings, and I'm very worried about that. So can I get assurance that that won't happen?
Yeah, I think it's noted around, it's come up around a couple of different issues around making sure, like, we say it's going to be X, how do we make sure it's going to be X? And I think that's part of the role of oversight, as well as what goes into the principle. So I think that's worth coming back to.
So if we, in the workshops, though, if we have one or two people who say, no, this, we can't have it looking like this, will they be respected?
I think it depends on if you have 90 people in the room and 88 say they like it and two say they don't.
Uh-huh.
That's a different reality. I don't know. I'm not offering that. I'm just saying that the idea is, and I think the thing that we're all committed to as the CAF is to make sure that the community perspective is included and is acted upon, because we represent the voice and we represent the community. So the intention is to certainly have that be the case. And I'm not as familiar with charrettes to know, but we can certainly note that as part of the process. And I'm just kind of making eye contact through John Winston's body to say, like, let's make sure we figure this out in terms of how you know, what are the teeth?
We want it to be aesthetic.
Yeah.
Nice looking. And green. Green. Thank you.
Thanks.
Jenny Perez on Plymouth. These notes came from Anita Theo Harris, also from Ann Chen. I've seen very little communication from the Westwood Board representatives regarding residential character district designation, which is codified in Planning Code Section 2441. I have not seen response from city representatives on how to meet RCD requirements that protect our unique neighborhood characteristics. The city supervisors granted our residential character district in 1992. All city representatives are legally obligated to ensure that all representatives on Plymouth and surrounding streets are not denied the legally protected neighborhood that we all bought into and live in. And while there is one statement in the staff responses to public input that indicate that some consideration of the fact that Westwood Park has been designated as an RCD district is not legally binding, and more importantly, does not recognize the city's legal obligation to preserve our neighborhood character in going forward with this development. Any development that borders Westwood Park must follow the RCD guidelines for our neighborhood. What has been proposed so far is not following the RCD code. We insist any RFPD note on this. Thank you.
Hi, Laura Fry, Westwood Park. Hi, everybody. I want to address two items Mr. Martin talked about. Like one of the people spoke earlier, I think we need more meetings. The RFP is, quote, building the envelope. the design workshop is deciding the design, the color, the paint, all that kind of stuff. This is the biggie, the RFP, how dense, how many units, how high, how little space. This is the biggie, and I really hope that you guys aren't going to just go forward with the RFP as it is, because it has not been responsive to the neighborhoods or even the stuff that's been happening in these meetings. I asked the planning department to give me a couple examples. I called a couple times, give me some examples. Show me an RFP that did not go to the maximum height, that did not go to the minimum open space. They never responded. And historically, my understanding, and logically, a developer is there to make money. He's going to go to the height that we allow. So if we say up to 65, it's going to be 64 and a half. It's not going to be 35. Why would he do that? So the RFP is huge. And I really hope you guys don't pass it through with these heights, with this density, because that hasn't been responsive to the neighbors or the neighborhood or the legal responsibility of the city to be responsive to the neighborhoods.
And just for clarity, again, the feedback right now is specific to the process that Mike presented. If you go into starting to talk about any of the principles or parameters, I'm going to stop you because we actually have a large chunk of time to do that. Okay, thank you.
Hi there, my name is Maureen and I live on Plymouth. And I wanted to comment on my appreciation for opening this up to further individual community members, because I personally do not feel that the CAC has listened to or represented the direct neighborhood concerns and or mitigated City College and particularly Westwood Park. One large concern I have is one of your members, Rebecca Lee, is a member of SFBARF, which is the Activist Housing Organization, and that doesn't seem to have been disclosed.
I'm not a member of SFBARF.
Oh, you just ran on that slate for the Sierra Club Hostel takeover?
No,
okay.
Let me just...
You know, actually,
regardless,
finish your comment and
then we can... Well, my comment is that I do not feel the CAC has been responsive to neighbors. The things that we've asked for have been crossed out, and that you're not building trust in the process. We want to be good neighbors. We really do. We love our neighborhood. That's why we're here. That's why we want to see this neighborhood succeed. And when I wake up one day and find out, hey, we're going to put a road through your backyard and 1,000 subsidized units, that doesn't seem to be very neighborly.
Francine Lafrano, Westwood Park. If you prefer, I read this comment later on, I will. It has to do with a document I'd like to submit that's going to be a key element for the RFP. Is that a general comment or for Okay, Westwood Park's Residential Character District Status, Section 244.1 of the Planning Code, was passed into legislation by the full Board of Supervisors. It is a key element to be included in any RFP, especially as to developing the western portion of the reservoir. We are proud that Westwood Park received the following unanimous commendation of the Board of Supervisors for our five-year effort. This was a very lengthy process. If I run out of my designated time, my husband will finish. Whereas the residents of Westwood Park neighborhood have spent the last 5 years studying their neighborhood in order to develop a special residential character district, and whereas the Westwood Park Association and its president, Anita Harris, undertook the task of studying the neighborhood architecture, topography, lot sizes, and collect input from the neighbors of the area in order to develop the residential character district. And whereas after years of study, resident input, research, the association working with the planning department developed the Westwood Park Residential Design Guidelines to use as the city's first residential character district. And whereas Anita Harris and members of the association then advocated and promoted the new guidelines and secured the endorsement of the Planning Commission and the unanimous recommendation of the Housing and Land Use Committee of the Board of Supervisors. And whereas other neighborhood associations should use the efforts of Westwood Park Association as a model for developing neighborhood guidelines and for shepherding the guidelines through the city's legislative process. And whereas the city's department should view the efforts of the Westwood Park Association and Planning Department as a model for developing legislation with the highest level of public participation. Now there be resolved that the City and County of San Francisco commends Nita Thee Harris and the members of the Westwood Park Association for their efforts in developing and advancing the first residential character district in San Francisco. So I'd like to submit this document as part of the record. Great, thank you. Thank you very much.
Monica Collins, Sunnyside and City College. I wonder if these are union jobs, actually. Because if they aren't, you could have a really big problem down the road, let's just say. Not for me. It's true, I was a union electrician for years. But I'm interested in knowing also if young people from the community of limited resources will be given a chance to apprentice on these jobs. Thank you.
Hi there, my name is Fernando Martí with the Council of Community Housing Organizations. I just wanted to make a brief comment about process and order of the timeline. I think what Mike Martin presented earlier is a very common way of approaching how development happens, where you do an RFP, find a developer, and then follow up with a design process. It is not the only way, however, of approaching an RFP. So in Visitation Valley and the Schlage Lock site, number of years were spent developing designs, developing urban design guidelines before a development agreement was reached. More recently, the Mayor's Office of Housing held a series of community design charrettes for a particular affordable housing site in North Beach Chinatown, which will then go out to an RFP to select a developer, giving the community an opportunity to then be able to design an RFP that has learned from the community working together to design a site and what should happen. So that's just to say there are other options available, and I just wanted to share that with you.
Thank you. All right, it's Max again, Ingleside. I just wanted to address the issue this woman brought up about the heights and
The height
of the building.
Right, so we'll actually get a chance to talk about that.
Oh, okay.
That's actually the item on the agenda.
Oh, okay. So,
anything about the parameters that have been revised? What?
Yes.
Oh, and this is your second time speaking?
It is my second time.
Come back up.
I have one other question.
Sure.
On this. Somebody mentioned more meetings. Can we get more meetings? Does anyone have an answer for that?
Yeah, we don't have a hard and fast. The process is to engage the community and get ourselves to a place where we are comfortable with the parameters of the principles, and we're working towards doing that. And we will continue to meet to make sure that that happens. And if it requires additional meetings, we will take additional meetings. This will not be, though I will be very clear, this will not be a process to stop the building of something because we won't be able to come to agreement. But their intention is that we want to be able to engage the community. But we represent the community so that we come up with parameters that everybody can feel good about, because we know if we come up with parameters that people don't feel good about, nothing will be built.
Because a number of people have said they want more meetings.
Yes.
So.
But if we were to have more meetings, it's going to be very specific, very targeted, and this is about maximizing. Because the other piece, as we all know, is that we all serve in this role as volunteers, and we all signed up for a certain scope. I think we're committed to the process to make sure that it has the maximum amount of community participation to get us to the outcome of the design principles that everyone can feel good about. And I will say that I don't think everyone will feel good about all of the principles, because we're not going to make everybody happy, but the intention of consensus is it something that you can live with? And I think we need to begin to think in that frame, because if we don't think with that frame, we'll never finish the process, because not everybody in this room is going to come to collective agreement. And I'm saying this as somebody who facilitates a lot of large group processes, so I think consensus is really the place that we want to head. Thank you.
Thank you.
Well, I'm not sure I'm going to say anything. I came in late, so what's the exact topic?
Well, you don't know the topic. We're currently talking about the RFP.
Okay, is it specifically on public benefits?
No.
Just parameters in general?
No, it's about the process.
The process of
the next steps where CEQA fits in and the
state. Oh, okay. Yeah.
It's all on the table
that.
Over here.
Okay.
We don't need to talk about it. I mean, if you have a comment,
are you trying to
comment.
Shut me up?
Yeah. No, I'm not trying to shut
you
up.
I'm just kidding. Okay,
so who are you? And
Alvin John, Sunnyside resident. In terms of the process, the whole idea behind the parameters was for the city agencies to accept and take in public comment regarding the parameters. And my feeling is that up to now, and looking at the revised principles and parameters, they don't really deal with substantive issues that and concerns that the people in the community have brought up. You know, you've taken in some minor details, but in terms of the big picture questions, I really feel that you've basically been avoiding or sidestepping the important questions that we have regarding the impact that the project will have on the surrounding community. I think it's been basically totally sidestepped, you know. I wrote a thing to all of you that quoted the San Luis Obispo city attorney, and he brought up six steps, and basically in sequence, six steps that need to be taken by city agencies. And my feeling was that you started from the conclusion. This is what you want, and then you work backwards and actually avoided steps in that sequence. Specifically, I don't know if I have time, but no, I don't have time, but basically I think you're sidestepping the sequence that you're supposed to be following in terms of CEQA.
Okay, Theodore from Excelsior. Just had a little question. How do you weight the relative importance of the different items on the RFP? Like, the developer will come up with this plan and then might not be able to do all the items on it, or might decide we'll have more better balance of money with these items and leave out these other items. So I just wondered, how does that work?
I just want to say, sometimes people ask questions and we don't give an answer right away, but you in particular as well. If that happens, check the website in a month and we publish a matrix with all your questions and all the answers that we can give you.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Hello, Harry Bernstein, District 11. Just thinking partly of what AJ just said about considering the present circumstances, you know, this present environment, what's in news, and how that will go forward. What I'm thinking of specifically, the lower reservoir is mostly a for overflow parking at this point. My understanding is the description of it is as an area for dog walking. And it seems to me that there should at least be mentioned the fact that there's been parking there for many, many years, and that is the current environment, even though it's, you know, not owned by college and not a permanent use, perhaps. But it shouldn't just be ignored, and that's is also part of the CEQA process to make sure that you start with where you are.
Any last comments about the RFP? Okay, so what I'd like to do, thank you everyone for your comments. So I think what we're going to do now is we're going to shift and we're going to do the other elements principle. So this is the last parameter within the that we're going to be covering. And just from a timing perspective, what's going to happen is we're going to get a chance to hear the presentation, and then we'll be taking our break, and then we'll be coming back in 15 minutes, okay? And for those who came in later, we have to let our transcriber Lee take a break, and so we need to stop for 15 minutes. Okay, thanks.
Great, thank you. Excuse me. Emily Less with the Office of Economic and Workforce Development. As Lisa said, this is the final item from the set of parameters, of first draft parameters that we had on the agenda to present last month, and because there was so much discussion of the City College related parameters and sustainability parameters, we're doing them this month. You know, rewinding to a year ago, before we had the CAC and we're really getting into detail on all the parameters, we started out with a broad conversation about all of the different things, the different amenities that people would be interested in seeing in the site. There's a survey that we administered online and at community meetings, and I know that the local neighborhood associations also administered versions of that survey. And so this is just a list. It's not ranked. It's just all of the different kinds of amenities and features that people would like to see in this project and at this site. And, you know, the various sets of parameters that we've gone through up until this set have covered really the majority of those around housing and affordable housing, urban design and neighborhood character, open space in the public realm, transportation, sustainability, and the project's relationship to City College. And so what we really tried to do with this final set was just to look and see, you can see them in little and green and then blown up here, kind of a handful of other priorities that hadn't fallen into the other sets that we've already covered, to try to make sure that they were caught and reflected somewhere. And so the categories that those fall into, I'll just briefly read them. Indoor community or indoor youth recreational facilities, childcare facilities, small businesses, workshops, and shared tech spaces, non-service, non-profit service provider spaces, doing something beautiful like public spaces and art, non-profit office space, and after-school program space. So I'm just going to, online and here you'll have received the full draft of the parameters, so I'm going to go over a really high-level summary. So the first one is the principle of accommodating a childcare facility as well as additional youth family elements to really make this a family-friendly community. And so the three parameters around those are around making space available for at least one childcare facility for children from infancy to 5 years, including residential units that are designed for providing in-home childcare, and working with City College, if City College is interested, to explore the possible expansion or relocation of the Child Development Center on this site. Again, if City College is interested, this could be an opportunity to collaborate and provide space. The second broad principle is around using the ground floor space in the new buildings that get created to find space to provide the different types of services and amenities and uses that people had mentioned. So childcare, other youth-friendly services, recreational facilities, arts and cultural facilities, service and social service providers, bicycle storage facilities and workshops. And the idea that in addition to providing these kinds of community amenities indoors, having those types of things happening on the ground floor and having the activity of people visiting and going in and out in those spaces also helps create great sidewalks and a great pedestrian realm and really an active place. We are also proposing that developers explore including neighborhood retail in those spaces, but only to the extent that they can prove that any additional neighborhood retail would negatively impact existing local retail businesses. And then finally, exploring whether there are additional programming and amenities that enhance quality of life for both new residents and neighbors. And this is really a catch-all. We know that new ideas may come out. We hope that, you know, if serious development teams will be out talking to people and learning about other ideas and other proposals. And so we really wanted to demonstrate that there's an openness to that additional creativity. So looking for proposals that really demonstrate an understanding of local social, arts, cultural, and other priorities. And doing that by proposing amenities that really will appeal to the broader community. And then kind of circling back to the physical design of the places that are proposed and that are designed, really showing that the design has those priorities and those ideas in mind. So that is the extent of it. I'll turn it over back to you, Lisa. Thanks.
Excuse me, can we just see the first thing that you had up
on
the screen?
Oh, that full list?
Yes.
Yeah, it's going to be really little, but I'm happy to put it up.
Okay.
Sure. Actually.
Great. Okay, so what we're going to do is we're actually going to go, I'm going to go to my fellow cat members first for responses. Maria, if you want us, we'll start on that end. We can leave the microphone down there and give comments. So if anybody's got comments, just let's just take the comments this way, and then we'll go to public comment. Okay. You're okay? You're good?
So in the first slide, there's a, you know, a very long list of the various amenities desired. How did you, I know a lot of these aspects, elements we talked about, so how did you sort of narrow into these 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7 bullets? So can you just kind of,
It's not really a narrowing. This is an exhaustive list of everything you heard, and there were certainly, you know, on this list, there were things that lots and lots of people were really excited about, and there were other things that small groups of people were passionate about. So
but these are kind of the major overlaps.
Yeah, so everything, we believe that everything on this list is covered in the full set of the parameters. I just highlighted it to kind of explain that the additional public benefits parameters that I just presented are a catch-all for the handful of things from this exhaustive list that weren't covered previously this fall.
So basically... So basically, off of the collective list, they mapped each of these to the other parameters, and if it showed up on another parameter, then it kind of got crossed off the list. So when you go to the second slide, where it's the green version, you know, these are the ones that were not covered by another parameter, so that became the catch-all, and said, okay, these are the others. Okay, and you feel confident that everything, you mapped it very closely to make sure.
We do, but certainly please let us know if you feel that we missed something.
We missed something. Okay, good.
We believe that we have them.
Great.
I do want to say, though, that this listing is it's almost like a wish list. I mean, it's we really have a great need for youth and child care facilities as well as the rec facilities. And I'm very glad that you are incorporating that as part of the parameters. I am also very excited to see that there's housing for family and multiple generations. Being a sandwich generation myself, I'm going to deal with a 100-year-old mother-in-law and 90-year-old mother and grandkids and everything else. It's just like, I've read too many articles where, and it's not that I'm, my kids are millennials, so I'm very much in sympathy for millennials and some other issues. Just by the way, in the international press, they're talking about UCs, which are the next generation to push the millennials. They're saying the millennials are—it's the young urban creatives. So, but what I want to say is that I do want to thank you for recognizing the multi-generational and diverse city that we have.
So, I just have one comment, and that is under Principle 2 for maximizing an active ground floor. I think this is one of the things that we've already seen on Ocean Avenue, which is problematic, is that we've got vacancies in spaces that we shouldn't have vacancies. So I would say that we want to make sure that we ensure vibrancy and active space, and we want to mitigate vacancies. So trying to put together an equation that makes sense so that we know that we have active things happening on the ground floor, I think is going to be really, really important for this site. Okay, thanks. So what I'm going to do is I'm actually going to call time 5 minutes early. So we're going to come back at the big hand is on the 8. That will be 15 minutes at 7:35 now. And so when we come back at 7:40, if you have feedback to this parameter, we'll ask you to line up, and then we'll take your comments. Thank you very much. And go ahead and move the microphone down so it's right level.
So I think we're talking about this. My name is Sheila, from teacher at City College. I live in Oakland. I spoke at the December 15th meeting and actually didn't catch it till after that comment section was over that actually the last and most important part of my comment was missing. And it does relate to this.
Okay.
Yes, because what I said was, after I talked about my students, if you'll remember, the use of the land now is not really spoken to, which is parking that is heavily used by City College students, faculty, and staff. My students who work all night long and come here are not able to take public transportation or ride their bike in some sort of utopian elitist assumption. They need a place to park so that they can come to class. And so what I said, and it's not reflected here.
Parking isn't another parameter, so that's why it's not here.
Well, it says creative solutions, pilot programs for parking. And what I was speaking to last time was it said shared parking. What needs to happen is the developer needs to create permanent parking for City College that isn't shared, that belongs to City College, that matches the number of spots that are there. Additionally, I'm surprised. What's never mentioned is also, you know, in this whole list of wish, again, fantasy, is the fact that this is landlocked. There's no way to access this plot of land. And so that has to be dealt with. You can't create a vibrant...
And that's covered in the transportation parameter?
Uh-huh.
And if it's not, then when we get to the next item, you should respond to it then, okay?
Okay.
So then
what are we talking about?
We're talking about this document, which is specifically the additional benefit...
So these stuff up here? I'm not clear.
Can you go to
the green ones?
Green ones. So do you have any feedback about the green ones, which also have a description in the parameters?
I think that it will be hard to get to these things because there's no access to them.
Okay.
Thank you.
And again, I'm not meaning to be tough. I'm trying to be clear for people because this process is complicated and we want to make sure that the feedback goes to the right section that we're covering.
Hi, I'm Ray from Sunnyside. Regarding principle number one, encourage to not overlook the after-school programs that might be a part of this, not just 1-year-olds to 5-year-olds, preschool. Section B, the design and construction should also consider noise and what childcare noise can be created and impacts it may have on the adjacent neighbors in Westwood Park. Principle number two, parking should also be included as an important use of the ground floors. The burden of proof should be the developer and the site manager to show that a comparable service is not available nearby. This mirrors what Lisa said earlier about we do not need additional vacant commercial spaces. We need a vibrant offering of amenities there, if there are to be any. Principle number three, the local arts section A, local arts priority is to provide ensure that there's access to arts. We need parking for the PAEC. The PAEC is expected to provide theater and music space that would be beneficial to the broader community, new residents, City College, and regional affiliates. There's also a need for a large public meeting space that can hold at least 100 people and doesn't charge more than a nominal fee for use. That would be a great benefit to this community. Such a space would be beneficial for local nonprofits, particularly neighborhood associations, and could address multiple needs if doubled as a center for activities for seniors, touring theater, and children's camps. These uses can be successful if the site is well maintained and managed for the safety of the seniors and children. Again, we encourage pedestrian and improved transit options to improve access to the community site.
And Ray, can you submit those comments in writing?
Yes, we can.
Good evening. My name is Fernando Marti. I'm with the Council of Community Housing Organizations. Just wanted to make a couple of comments that I think point to some of the drawbacks that we have seen in looking at these development parameters, which is a lack of data and a lack of research leading to some of the recommendations. So, for example, the first recommendation that was talked about in the slides was about child care facilities. In my previous life, I worked for a nonprofit architecture office that worked on a lot of child care facilities. The city, in fact, has a nexus study that links development to the need for child care spaces. It would be very important if you all were considering child care spaces to understand how much child care space we would need given how many dwelling units. In 2008, the Nexus study identified 12 to 20 square feet of indoor space and 8 to 13 square feet of outdoor space for each dwelling unit being created. The guideline talks about serving children from infancy to five years old. If you all have worked around child care facilities, you'll know that those are very different needs for infants, for toddlers, and for preschoolers. They often have different providers. There's very few providers that actually serve that range of needs. So it might be three different child care facilities that you might need. So this is the kind of, I think, information that you would want to do your research on and be able to put more specifics into an RFP rather than kind of broad and vague guidelines. And then to mirror some of the comments that were made earlier about ground floor spaces, as an architect, I'm a big fan of activating ground floor spaces. But which, you know, makes sense, say, on the Avalon or the Phelan Loop buildings right on Ocean Avenue. But what kind of ground floor spaces make sense in a landlocked area? If it might be certain child care centers, it might be some community meeting rooms. Is anybody really going to come to a retail space in which there's only one street that accesses that space? So you may, in fact, want to consider ground floor housing along those areas that might look more like the neighborhood here. Thank you very much.
My name's Ken. I'm a resident of the only character district in San Francisco, Westwood Park. I'm a mortgage payer and also a real estate taxpayer. I participated in a generation of all those parameters. I've been into all the meetings that were for the Balboa Park plan since 2001. I've been to all those meetings. I recognize many of those parameters that you have up on the screen there. I'd like to bring it to the attention of the public here. If you go through those parameters, you'll see that less than 20% of them have to deal with housing. If you read through them, you'll realize, I believe there's 31 up there. You'll see most of them have to do with open space, walking, easier to get to weekday needs, recognition of cultural history, etc., etc., etc. So I just would like to bring that to the attention. Thank you.
Alvin Jobs, Sunnyside. I just want to rip off the person that spoke. The person who spoke two speakers in front of me, he talked about drawbacks, and this parameter talks about additional public benefits. And when you talk about additional benefits, I think you're talking about a trade-off. And what this parameter doesn't address are the drawbacks. What are, you know, when the BR project gives you these additional benefits, how about what does the BR project take away from you? And hint, parking. But.
Sorry.
So we have the handheld mic, which I don't think we'll have the problem with, so let me pass this over to you. Alvin, the curse of Alvin.
Don't let him touch your technology. Hold on a second. I know Alvin, so I can make a joke.
Hi, Chris Hansen from the Excelsior. Maybe I missed something, but I'm a little confused as to where this actually, this survey, how it was generated. Is this just...
A year ago we had...
Right, yes, I was here for those.
Online survey at the same time.
So, okay, do you have any, maybe any other information that you can see where this came from?
Yeah,
some documentation on that? Okay, great, thank you.
So, you're
sorry. Microphone juggling. So online there's more information?
Yes.
Okay.
Can you see the website?
Yeah.
Yeah.
So there's, and I know it's confusing, there's two pages. There's one that's dedicated to the CAC and another that's dedicated to Balboa Reservoir in general. So on that general page, there are some memos summarizing the previous workshops. In those memos, we talk about what happened in those workshops, and I think there are specific survey results in them. If not, we can post those.
Okay, thank you. Thanks for the question.
I just had a short comment about the items in green that are no longer here after that nice noise concert we have by Ellen. And that was that the Performing Arts Center proposed would seem to be a great opportunity to get the art spaces. They're no longer here now, but the nonprofit spaces, the art beautiful spaces, the space for techs, and there they go, small business tech spaces, workshops, probably not the childcare facilities, but why not have a little more far-reaching thing and work with City College on building a performing arts center that can handle these things as well as the necessary parking for the school that serves like 50,000 students yearly, decade after decade. Just a thought.
Okay, so that's the end of the public comment. So thank you everybody for your feedback. So now what we're going to do is we're going to move to the big item of the night, which is to provide, so we have four areas that we will be able to, that we're going to talk about tonight to give public comment to. So what I'd like, so those are the revised urban design, revised housing, public realm, and transportation. So there's four of the seven elements we're going to cover tonight. So what I would like to have you do is, on behalf of the CAC, we are in big, giant elephant ear listening mode to your feedback. And what I'd like to have you do is, as specific as you can be, will help us. So what we've done is, the feedback that was in, so what you'll see is that the comments in red are the edits that were provided based upon your and our feedback to the original element within the principle. So what each person will have 2 minutes to speak, just like always, and if you are going to speak on more than one element, I would just ask you to say, in housing parameter two, like be the signpost to us of exactly where your feedback comes to so that we can follow it. And with that, I would love to have people line up. Is there a question?
They're giving a general comment for people to make a general comment.
That's going to come at the very end. General comments are at the very end because we feel that, and just so you can get a little bit into our heads thinking about the design of the meeting, since we knew people were going to have a lot of comments about the parameters, we thought we would lead with that first, so that's why. Okay, so with that, line up as you see fit, do you need to talk about it first? Oh, okay, pardon me. Excuse me. I'm so sorry. Okay, all right.
Linda Judge, Westwood Park Association, Balboa Reservoir Committee Chair. First of all, I'd like to start this by saying our community wants the new neighborhood to be successful. We truly do. We understand that there's a very, very important need for affordable housing for a multitude of different kinds of and income levels socioeconomically. We acknowledge that. And we also acknowledge that the 2009 Balboa Area Station Plan and its FEIR clearly address those concerns by a number of the community members in our neighborhood who were part of that process. Thank you. Dear members of the BRCAC, following distribution of the revised principles and parameters by city staff, the attached matrices were compiled by the Westwood Park Balboa Reservoir Committee. They compare Westwood Park's submitted community concerns to the revised PNPs. Please consider comparison results. There were many draft parameters in the original PNPs proposed by the Planning Department and MOEWD that Westwood Park Association accepted without changes. However, it appears only minor revisions were made, in response to the Westwood Park proposed items. The larger changes were not incorporated. For example, affordability mix weighted towards the middle class, contiguous open space and total amount of open space, recognition and respect of the Westwood Park RCD status, and the concerns of the Westwood Park neighborhood neighbors immediately adjacent to the site. The results are of significant concern to the Westwood Park community. Thank you.
Hi, everyone. So I'll try to make this quick because I know there are a lot of public comments.
Sorry, Jeremy.
No problem. But we did want to take a chance to explain some of the reasoning behind the changes that might not be so obvious from the red lines. So again, just to recall, today we're going to be reviewing the revisions to just these four sections: housing, public realm, which is also considered open space, urban design, and transportation. Next meeting, we will review the other three components of the RFP: sustainability, City College, and the additional benefits that we heard just a minute ago from Emily. Again, and since Mike went into this in detail, I won't belabor the point, but for those of you who missed the beginning of the workshop of the evening tonight, this starts where we are tonight, and it helps provide the context of how much more public input and at what stage, what type of public input is appropriate at each stage. So we really want to get to this community design workshops piece because, as Mike said, that is where we can dig in to site design, building design, trade-offs between all these benefits we're talking about. But before we get there, we need to set up these broad guidelines that go in the RFP. So just take note, and we'll post this. There's an older version of this on the website, but the idea here is that everything in orange is an opportunity for public input. So this is more or less towards the beginning of the conversation where we are tonight. So we'll be reviewing these four memos, as Lisa just mentioned. And one thing we want to, it's really hard to explain, but we try to come out with it each time, is that there are a lot of really laudable and great ideas. There are values that each and every one of us have that we take note of. Philip does assiduously. Thank you, Philip. And are written in those matrices that were alluded to a minute ago. And we do our best to accommodate everything in the RFP, but ultimately, not everything can be accommodated. And so it's a balancing act how this document is written. You can see this is just a graphic sample of the words that were mentioned in those earlier workshops from a year ago, as well as in the survey. And the bigger the word, the more often that word was mentioned. And so you can see the things that stand out: City College, housing, open space, neighborhood, parking, affordable housing. I mean, again, it's just a graphic example of these are all the things that we're trying to balance and make sure get into the RFP to the best of our ability, that in a way that elevates the priorities we've heard and does that trade-off or the balance with priorities that we might not have heard as much. And so, Alvin, to your comment before, this we don't see it as a way of taking away of things, but it's this balancing act of what we can provide. And so to that point, the parameters that you've seen, how are they created? Initially, you know, the project is part of the public land for housing program. There is an acknowledged and serious need for affordable housing in the city. That is the genesis of a lot of projects like this one. And again, you're going to hear that over and over, that affordable housing is a serious need, and that is what's driving a lot of this. At the same time, certainly after that first workshop that we had at Lick Wilmerding, and everyone since then, we have heard open space is a serious community need and priority. And so we have done our best to elevate that priority in the RFP language. So the parameters that you saw, that first draft, were kind of based on these two things. Then we took your comments in this forum as well as online, over 300, maybe closer to 400, that were consolidated down into 300 comments, and did what we could to revise the parameters. Those are the red lines you see there tonight. And I'm going to talk about that in a minute, just what we revised and some questions that were asked in that process. And again, not to belabor this, but this is part of a longer process. After the developer is selected, first of all, the selection is based on those priorities. So everything we say and everything in that language, those are the measures by which the developers have to compete on, and the best ones, the best proposals will excel. So they will beat the minimum that we set forth. And then once that selection is made, then in those community design workshops that I mentioned a minute ago, then we can really explore how that looks, the design of it, the trade-offs that the developer, the architects, and the communities might have to make. So I'm going to go into each of these four categories briefly. We're not going to mention each red line. You can see the red lines in the handouts that you have, but I want to give a little bit of a background or some answers to questions that were asked throughout the course of the last 5 months. So in housing, and this is a little bit of a repeat if any of you were here on October 19th when we responded to the September meeting about housing. This is the same content, more or less. And so these five bullets here are kind of summarized a lot of the comments that we heard that ended up being incorporated into the red lines you see tonight. So there was a lot of concerns about family units, and I'll get into that a little bit later as well. In the transportation section, there was a sort of explicit concern about making sure there's opportunity for ownership and rental housing. That language is now in the RFP. Alternative models, people wanted to consider things like co-ops. That language is now in the RFP. Same with specific targeting specific populations. These are the people and populations that people wanted to consider on this site. That language is now in the RFP. And the final one, it was to make sure that housing doesn't take precedent, or all these sort of concessions aren't made towards height and housing at the expense of all the six other categories. And so there's a clause in the RFP now that says, hey, you can exceed these affordable housing requirements, but make sure you provide the open space and make sure you serve the transportation needs that are in the rest of the RFP. So some questions that were asked specific to housing, considerations around student housing. Personally, I think it's a great idea. I think, you know, if it works out that student housing is on the site, I think it would be wonderful. The RFP has framed the language so that it doesn't force the developer to provide student housing if there isn't a college partnership. If City College is not interested in student housing, we're not going to make them provide student housing. But that opportunity is certainly there. And, you know, the teams that provide the best proposal, they might explore that option. There were some questions about, can we prioritize neighborhood residents as the future residents of this site? That runs into some challenges around fair housing laws, about who we can let in and not. But there is, I believe, there's some parallel legislation that is being explored at City Hall to see what's legally possible there. There was a lot of concern, and I think this is a great question, about how do we make sure affordable units stay affordable, right? We don't want to just build them and have them flipped and lose that dedication to a certain income band. So it's in the planning code. that these units will stay affordable, Section 415 for all the wonks out there. We're happy to talk to you more about that, but I think it's fair to say that affordable units in the project will remain affordable. And then I'm going pretty fast here. So the last thing, we've heard of this phrase fair market value a lot. The land is owned by the PUC, and it's in the city charter that they have to be financially responsible. They have to get fair market value for the land if they are selling it. And so that is something we can't really argue with. And I think it's also good to remember that why do they have to get fair market value? They're responsible to us as ratepayers. And so there is, if we want agencies like the PUC to be fiscally responsible, this is one element of that. But this gets to this next question about the mixed income level. What is fair market value? Well, we've structured a lot of the language in the RFP around Proposition K, which was approved by voters last November.
That was 2014.
There were two.
Yeah.
That's 20. Sorry.
That's correct.
This is correct. Yes. There were two Prop K's. This is the one we're talking to now is from 3 months ago. Yeah, it was 2015. Yeah, but and that confuses me too. So this from the most recent Prop K, there is some language in there that says the city. To clarify, Prop K doesn't apply to this property because it's owned by the PUC, which is what's known as an enterprise agency where they generate their own revenues. So in this case, they generate revenues from utility, from electricity and gas bills, right? Or electricity and water bills. But we did mirror the intent and the language of Prop K in the RFP that we're looking at now. And that language strives to create 33% affordable housing on property owned by public agencies, and uses that as the measure of fair market value. And so before Prop K, this is actually we're doing pretty good. It's not fair market value isn't saying if we turn the whole thing into private or market rate units, it's not setting that as the fair market value. It's assuming that there will be 33%. And there's another clause that is also mirrored in the RFP language that says large sites of 200 units or more should strive for 50% affordable. That includes low, moderate, and middle incomes. So in general, the language in the RFP mirrors Proposition K. This next one, there were a lot of questions about why can't we make the whole site affordable housing, and there are a lot of challenges to that. One is that if just to contextualize this this project, the Upload Reservoir, it's one of four public sites that are currently being used or currently making up the public land for housing program in the city. Those three other sites, those are all low income affordable projects. This is the only one where we're considering, where the city is considering housing for that moderate income band, the teachers, utility workers, emergency service workers. That is something that's unique to Balboa Reservoir and is one of the reasons, it's one of these balancing acts, right? If it were made 100% affordable to low incomes, that would require a lot more city subsidy, and currently the money that's allocated for housing is already allocated to other low-income projects around the city. So that subsidy doesn't exist at the moment. Another reason why it cannot be 100% affordable is that we want to provide all the other benefits, the other features that are in those six other categories, open space, transportation, the public realm. And the key way that we're going to finance, or that stuff would be financed, is through these different tranches, these different rates of housing. There's something that we're exploring called an infrastructure financing district, as well as the market rate housing that would provide the margins needed to finance all that other stuff. And so it's a tough balancing act, but that's the reason, those are the challenges and reasons why It's not currently proposed as 100% affordable. Okay, that was a mouthful, partly because housing is not my expertise, but these next ones are, so this will be fast. And then we can get to your public comments. So public realm, these were the questions that came up, if you remember, in October, November, I don't know, one of those meetings. We talked about public realm. Sue presented it. These kind of summarize what we've heard. There are about 50-some-odd comments that you can see in the back if you'd like. A lot of the comments asked to clarify open space, and so we added a lot of clarifying language in the RFP. Won't bore you with that. A similar question, will these open spaces remain open forever? And silly me, I presume yes, always, but we realized as we were reviewing it, the language doesn't actually say that. So we added that back in. Open space now, open space forever. A lot of questions were geared towards the qualities of those open space. We heard a lot of comments about wanting multiple activities in the open space or in one park, that they should be active and populated throughout the day, that they should be safe and well-lit, and that the design of the open space network should be used to moderate the scale or help balance the effect of large buildings if they end up being large. So we heard a lot of concerns about that, and to be frank, a lot of that language is already in there. So what we did was we did our best to strengthen that language, to make it more clear. If there's a word like generally, we crossed out generally. And so it might appear that there are not some red lines, but that's because we believe that the language is already there, and if you don't agree with that, those are the public comments we want to hear from you tonight. The last category is about the qualities of open space. We're concerned about the impacts on neighbors. Some folks really wanted to minimize the impact on existing neighbors. Some comments were specific about privacy. Others were just really general about impacts. We did our best to assume what they were talking about. In general, I think it's privacy and security concerns. Other comments wanted to make sure that the open space is connected to different neighborhoods or the adjacent properties. So right there we have, they're not completely opposed, but we have this balancing act that we have to kind of play here with how do we acknowledge and respect both of these types of comments. We hope that the language in the RFP did just that. If you disagree, again, we encourage your specific comments tonight. So the last kind of general comment, and not this is in no order necessarily, but was this desire for a larger park area. And so I want to talk about that, again, just to contextualize why and how we got to the numbers and space types that we proposed in the RFP. Again, it's this real trick of balancing. How do we provide housing and open space? How do we provide housing? How can we afford to finance the type of housing for low income and work and moderate incomes and still provide open space? This stuff is not cheap. What's the best way to do that? And we can't forget that this is a balancing act. And so while some folks would like to see the whole thing be open space, it's hard to achieve that and finance that, not to mention maintain. So just to keep that in mind, and to put this in context, it's not the easiest thing to see here. This is a site plan for the Schley Block development site. You might have heard it. Let's mention it before because it's a very comparable development. It's 20 acres. It's over in this valley. At Bayshore and Leland. And in that development agreement, it's a very similar process and site to this one. Not exactly the same, but similar. They ended up, again, it's 20 developable acres. They ended up with 1.75 acres of open space in the development agreement. The Balboa Reservoir, just by comparison, is a little bit smaller. But the minimum open space that we're already starting at in the RFP is 4 acres. So the minimum is already twice as much as what the most comparable development is providing. And so we think that's pretty good. What does that mean? What does 4 acres mean, right? There's a clause in the RFP that says one of the open spaces inside of that 4 acres has to be one and a half acre park, has to be a serious park. There's probably room to build more, but we're not designing it now, so we don't know. But the reason we chose 1.5 is that if you look around the neighborhood in the Sunnyside Rec Center, Mini Love Ward, a lot of other parks around the city are about 1.5 acres, and they provide a lot. They provide those multiple activities that people have been asking for. I live in the Mission District. There's the newest sort of refurbished park there, the Mission Rec Center with the pool. That's about 1.8 acres. It is the best thing, I think, that has happened to the Mission in a long time. I see families, kids of all ages, people playing soccer, swimming, basketball at all hours of the night. Not saying that they'll play all hours of the night here, but I think there's. But the point is, you can do a lot with 1.5, under 2 acres, and we're saying that you need to have 4. Okay, and this gets a little wonky, but I hope it illustrates a little bit more. We've got a lot of questions about, well, what happens to the rest of the city? What about all those other buildings in Soma? Like, we're not getting as much as they are. So it's hard to answer that question categorically, but to provide a couple of examples of what's happening here. This is multiple buildings on a public site. This doesn't happen often. But just suspend reality for a moment and remember, like, let's say we're looking at a building that wants to be approved by the planning or by the planning department, and it has to go through code. Typically, if it's one building on one site, they have to pay impact fees. Okay, right? There's a publicly accessible open space, there's an open space requirement where a developer can choose whether to provide private open space at a larger amount or provide less open space as long as it's publicly accessible. So they can provide a bunch of decks or balconies, backyards, or they're incentivized, because we want public space, they're incentivized to create more publicly accessible. So that's the normal kind of deal for kind of a comparable development to what we're talking about. In the case of the Balboa Reservoir, we're saying, again, 4 acres with a minimum of 1.5 acre park. There's no way that impact fees from comparable buildings will build that. That's a lot more out of the gate. We bumped up this publicly accessible requirement to 60. So over the course of, that's per unit. So we don't know how many units yet, but if you can imagine, you can multiply the increase between 60 and 54, you can get a big chunk of open space out of that, and that's on top of the 4 acres. So already, even though the minimum says minimum 4, if you add this requirement and they choose to make it publicly accessible space, that's going to be more than 4. And then the other things which we get a little bit designy and explicit in the public realm language, is that all the landscape paths, all the private open spaces that are publicly accessible or buffers or walkways, they need to read as parks. When people go there, they need to look like they're public parks so people feel welcome and safe, and they can enjoy it just like any park. So taken all together, we think that is a lot more than just what 4 acres says on a piece of paper. This is just an example from 333 Harrison, where they opted to build this publicly accessible open space instead of putting all their eggs in the private open space basket. Okay, how are we doing on time? Keep going. So urban design, 3 out of 4. Again, this just summarizes the comments that we've heard in general. Not a lot of changes in this one, you'll notice. Not a lot of red lines. Again, we hope that's because we achieved what people are looking for in the urban design section. And I know there's one complicated one, Heights, which I'll talk about. But in general, people were very concerned about making walkable, safe streets, pedestrian-friendly streets. That is absolutely the number one priority in this city. You will not see a development that's proposed, and if you do, you should protest it and say, hey, these sidewalks aren't wide enough. We have a Better Streets plan, we have NACTO, we have a ton of pedestrian-oriented planners and in public works and in city planning. That is absolutely a number one priority, and when we talk about transit, pedestrian access is the key. So we will not back down from that, and these streets will be safe. The sidewalks will be handled. Urban design, again, this issue of respecting neighbors and impact on neighbors, that was illustrated in comments about shadows and heights and the sort of scale or bulk of buildings. And again, as we heard earlier tonight, character compatibility of the design. We did our best without, because we're not going to be prescribing architecture in this RFP, we did our best to make sure these comments were addressed. There's a lot of parameters about shadows, about privacy, about breaking up scale and moderating the buildings with open space, as that previous comment says. And we think, you know, the savvy developers that come to the table and want to propose something, they're going to read that and they're going to recognize that. And if they don't, then they won't do as well in the selection process. If you don't think the language is strong enough, then again, we encourage you to come up and make your comments. And the more precise you can be in your language, the better, the more easily we can, you know, understand what you're saying, and the more likely it'll get into the final document. Heights, you know, we did hear some comments and some fears about the heights. Surprisingly, and you should read the response to comments, there weren't a lot of comments about lowering the height. I think because we provided the specific language is a height should range from 25 to 65. That's the sort of standard range we're talking about. And only go up to 85 when there were additional public benefits on the table. Somebody had the good sense to say, well, those should be substantial additional benefits. We don't want to just give away 20 feet of height just for something insubstantial. So we added that. Okay, we strengthened the language, and it's not, this 85, again, is only if that benefit is really worth the extra height. And at the same time, those taller buildings, again, just to remind you, would only be on the east side of the site. The part of the context statements are about respecting neighbors, and everyone understands that there are single-family homes over there. There's language about adding buffers and keeping the heights lower on the west side. And here, on the east side, where there's 65-foot buildings or even taller with topography, that's the appropriate place for height. And so our hope is to keep that flexibility so that developers can provide something that's financially feasible, provides affordable housing, while tapering and respecting the heights on the east side. Quick clarification.
How many stories are there?
You can generally kind of ascribe 10 feet to a story. Okay, usually the first story is 15 feet, and everyone above that is 10. So 2 to 6 is the core. And this is saying if it goes up to 8, only with substantial community benefits. The final comment, and we're not going to talk about this too much tonight because there's a lot more in the City College section that we'll talk about next time, was, hey, when you do your urban design, don't forget City College is right there. Okay, your urban design needs to respect that this is a central part of our neighborhood and connect to it. Sorry, I'm getting a little long-winded here. These were my responses. Basically, for the most part, the language was clarified or made stronger, and then a lot of the comments were addressed in other sections. Okay, you still with me? Last one for tonight. And again, we're not getting into specifics up here, but I encourage you to make specific comments later. Transportation was definitely by far the most popular subject. We had more than 3 times the number of comments for transportation than we did for any of the other sections. And this was our best shot at kind of summarizing the topics. Certainly a lot of concern about circulation and congestion. Parking was definitely up there. These are probably the top two concerns. And when we say parking, there are a lot of aspects of parking. I would say almost the empathy for parking or parkers came out the most. Where are students going to park? Right? Not, you know, there was concerns about people parking in my neighborhood, our neighborhoods, but for the most part is, where are these future residents going to park? And what do these people do? And so I took some inspiration from that. I think people are starting to recognize this really tricky act of parsing the parking needs. Not just a universal problem, it's we need to figure out the different populations and different people's needs and how do we address those strategically. So I'll get to that in a second. Again, prioritizing pedestrian safety. This was a big question, and we're going to get into the TDM is transportation demand management. There's, if you think about parking or you think about transportation infrastructure, there's the supply side. How much parking? what highways, what transit infrastructure. And then there's the demand side. What are people asking for? What are people willing to pay for? Or what are they taking? What are they saying with their dollars and their time? TDM, Transportation Demand Management, attempts to put, uses policies and practices to manage that demand. If you look at it as, in an economic way, there's only so many roads and resources we have. TDM tries to manage them efficiently. People are asking, well, how does TDM really get people out of their cars? We're going to have a lot of opportunity to talk about that in a separate project, the TDM plan for the neighborhood, so I'm not going to get into that in detail. Lots of people want incentives for alternative alternatives, especially for students, and people are asking, why isn't TDM being addressed on the citywide level? So if you can imagine like the Constitution or some kind of bureaucratic document, these are our whereas statements. So we understand, whereas, we know that we need open space and affordable housing. We know, everyone knows, that peak hour congestion is a serious, serious challenge here. And we know that access to City College is of primary importance. So we're not denying any of that. We're just trying to come up with the best solutions for these challenges. And again, I have a little graphic, so I'm already done. Anyway, these are general responses. So more or less, this will all be addressed in the TDM study that looks at the neighborhood comprehensively. It helps us get data, okay, because we're not speaking from the same data right now. It helps look at the limited road space that we have and make the most efficient use of it. How do we get the most people through here in a dignified and timely manner? Again, pedestrian safety is a critical key to all of that, and we believe this sort of parallel study around TDM will help get to that. But while we're still in the RFP, before we get to that study, we just want to show you, contextualize everything. There's a lot going on in the Balboa Reservoir area, or the Balboa Park area. As you know, there's another CAC that's primary mission is to provide input and oversee all the transportation improvements in this plan area, in this sort of gray, darker gray area. And all of these little balloons here are projects that have been approved or in planning or completed. And get at that issue of how do we use this right-of-way better? How do we make transit more efficient? How do we make walking more safer and dignified? And how do we get more people through on the cars and buses that we already have? So some of the projects, like the 8X or the Future Geneva Harney BRT, a lot of the yard work that you see in red, all of those projects are addressing that. So bit by bit, we can make the choice of walking or transit or biking a little bit easier for people who want to make that choice. This is the TDM study. Again, these things don't really work if you look at them in isolation, so the study will look at all the transportation issues in this neighborhood. That is supposed to start in February, hopefully end by the summer. Pedestrian safety, talked about this. Again, a lot of the projects going on in the neighborhood address pedestrian safety. Parking ratio, I just want to kind of highlight this. Again, we don't have all the answers to parking right now because we don't have all the data. But one thing we did hear, again, that empathy, that sort of desire for family units on the site and desire for making sure that it works for them. We know families need cars often to shuttle kids around or especially to worker families. So what we did was we specified in the document, you'll see in the red line, for family units, which are considered two bedroom or more, that ratio, the parking ratio, should be one parking space per unit. Okay, but again, one size doesn't fit all. If there are student housing units on this site, that's the population that might not need one car per unit. And why would we put our resources in building all that parking when we could put them in housing or put them into open space? So, consistent with a lot of zoning that's already in the code, we specified this language that there should be no more than one car per four units if it's student housing. Okay. So that was a whirlwind that sort of gives a kind of qualitative, hopefully answers and clarifies some of the questions we heard. You can see the precise and specific changes in the red lines in your documents. And if you have, again, comments on those, I'd encourage you to bring them up today. So,
great,
thanks.
Thank you. Okay. So, is this on? So, what I'd like to do, so sorry again, Jeremy, but thank you for the thorough analysis of the updates. What I'd like to have you do is, if you want, like, let's have the first 8 or 10 people sign line up to make their comments, and then we'll do a second group. That way you weren't standing for a really long time. Unless you don't stand. And then I would just ask you to, the 2 minute rule is in effect, so to be as succinct as possible with your comments, whether it be talking specifically to one memo and a specific principle, or if you have just a general overview comment, then just to say, I just have a general comment I want to provide. Again, the better, more specific you are, the better able we are to follow you. Okay?
Does the CAC have comments about the presentation?
We do not have comments. Our goal is to listen to you first, and we're going to respond after. And probably we're going to respond at the next meeting. Most likely, given that it's 8:32. And of course, you can always commit the comments. You can also provide your comments always online as well. Okay, thanks. So our first speaker. And let's grab the mic. Can the mic go into the holder? It doesn't fit. It's too big. Just hold on. Okay.
So again, I'm Laura from Westwood Park. And 2 minutes on all of this is really not enough. But I hope that you're letting people add to this in the next workshop.
Again, also comments can be made online. 2 minutes is what we're holding to.
Okay. To me, I'm going to say again, the elephant in the room is they never use the word density. They never use the word number of units. The plans have always been 425 to 500 units. It's in city policy. City policies are supposed to honor the neighborhoods. If you're looking at 65 and 85-foot height limits, you're talking at 600, 700, 800, 1,200 or more units. You're talking about multiple Avalons in that space. And I think it's disingenuous for them not to even bring that up, to talk number of units. That ought to be in the RFP. What are the parameters for the number of units? And then a couple things, like with the open space, they say 1.5. Well, in there it says it can be divided by streets. So the Miramar Boulevard and Westwood Park could be counted as one space, even though there's streets right going right through it. That's not a park, it's a boulevard. And then the public, the privately owned public space, the increase of the amount of feet of that. It even says in there, they can choose not to make public. So that might not even be part of our open space. So that's, and I've got some things here. These are just documents. Just I pulled a few things off. Just policies about open space and housing and the responsibility of the city to be responsive to the surrounding neighborhood and not do some like really high density thing in a neighborhood that doesn't have that thing happening. And I think too, and I didn't address this earlier, Mr. Martin had talked about that they are managing the BRCAC, and that's what I sort of feel like has happened. The planning department,
Francine Lofrano, Westwood Park, I'd like to draw everybody's attention to page 2 of 5, which memo? Proposed public ground principles and parameters. Specifically, item number F, respect the privacy and scale of all adjacent uses. Do y'all notice how, especially Westwood Park neighbors to the west, has been crossed out? Everybody should look at that, because there's a lot of things that we have, as Westwood Park people, have made numerous comments in regards to the height. We said 25 to 40 feet with a maximum of 65. That's been struck out. The parking, I mean, it's just, 2 minutes obviously doesn't provide enough time for all my comments. I mean, it's just so many things that we have not been listened to. And this is why I have really lost faith in this process. I just think that this is just a sham. And the parking is just something that, you know,
one parking place per family unit. I have neighbors, multiple neighbors, with little kids. The husband has a car and the wife has a car. That's two parking spaces. This is not realistic whatsoever, and I'm just very disappointed to see how many things have been redlined out and changed, you know, that does not comport with our beliefs. And going back to the CAC's pieces of paper here, powers and duties, section 5.17.5, powers and duties of the Balboa Reservoir CAC. Specifically, I'd like to draw everybody's attention, since this is a long, probably forgotten document, to item B, the advisory committee should provide feedback on what development objectives should be included in the request for proposal to be issued for the city for the development. And it's not limited, but includes item number 5, good neighbor policies to serve existing residents and small businesses around the site. Thank you.
Yeah, I lost faith a long time ago. Ellen Wall, Sunnyside Neighborhood Association. One of the things that Jeremy says, I found a little shocking, is preserving sidewalks, which has not been done. The development at the corner of Job on Ocean is, what street is that? That corner, the housing that's being built at that corner overlaps the old sidewalk by about 4 feet.
Keystone and Ocean Avenue.
Yeah.
Keystone and Ocean Avenue.
Well, that's, I think it's Faxon because it's where Job on Ocean is.
There's no housing.
Miramar, that's right. It's Miramar. And that was already a dangerous intersection, and now it's going to be very dangerous. Being an old lady as I am, being bumped when I'm walking down there, that's scary. And I don't trust anymore in people saying that they're going to do these things. Jeremy, I'm sure you're a very nice person, but go take a walk down there. It's not pretty and it's not safe. Thank you.
Thank you. Jennifer from Sunnyside. I'm going to jump around a bit. So urban design and neighborhood, 3A, like you to change, utilize trees to reduce wind impacts, to utilize wind-appropriate trees to reduce wind impacts, because we already wind blow very easily.
Also,
in 1B, we'd really like to request 2 contiguous acres for park space. This is a much more populated area than some of the others. And then in transportation, not 1A, not only is the Balboa Park area public transit rich, it also acts as an important entrance and exit for the freeway. There are still compelling reasons to drive cars, and this location is well suited to encouraging the adoption of electric cars. And then sustainability, principle 5D, air quality. We expect a reduction in air quality in this area associated with increased congestion on the freeway and neighborhood streets. The use of vehicles to accommodate new residents will increase whether the vehicles are owned, shared, or visiting. To reduce the expected effects of added car pollution to our children and other neighbors, we want to reiterate that all car parking spaces that are created indoors should include electric outlets to accommodate and encourage transitioning from gas-powered cars to EVs. And then I don't know which one this is, the housing parameter. Due to the neighborhood character and the location that is not in a commercial thoroughfare, we want height limits and no trade-off with public benefits. Though we want affordable housing, we do not want higher buildings based on how much affordable housing there is. And we're concerned that Sunnyside homes may be affected by higher heights on the northeast side. Thank you.
Hi,
Hi, Maxie Walt, Eagleside. I just, then when that was brought to my attention that this was crossed out under C, it's number,
Which memo? Draft transmission.
Draft transportation principles. Number C, circulation strategies should pay particular attention to congestion and public safety impacts on Phelan, Ocean, and Plymouth Avenues in the vicinity of the site, which have been identified by the community as key areas of concern. That was crossed out. I think it should be put back on. It was crossed out. And then the other one. Yeah, I was concerned about the heights. Also, again, 60 feet is what, that's like six stories. And is that higher than this building? I think that's way too high. Way too high. It does not fit in here at all. And it's going to turn into a high-rise place around here. And then I understand the concern for safety, but I'm concerned about the lighting, because if we're going to have playgrounds, and I don't think we need a soccer field, because we've got, City College has places to play, and there's many, well, I don't know, maybe not, Mini Ward Park has a huge soccer field over there, and they have hugely bright lights that are on till 10 o'clock at night. It's like a spaceship, you know, and I wouldn't want to see that down here, because it's just, forget seeing any stars around here. Well, this is the city. But so I don't think the soccer field would be good there. It's just too much. Pardon me? It wasn't even mentioned, but...
It's not mentioned. Yeah, it was just offered up as the design.
Yeah, okay. Because I don't think that would be the place. I don't think that would be the place. And I agree with the woman who mentioned the number of units. We should definitely... That should be clarified. The height is too high. Okay. That's all. Thank you.
Hi, my name is Montserrat Wasson, and I live in the Eagle Side as well. The 85 feet high doesn't matter what the incentives are. It's unbearable for this neighborhood. I'm also really curious what you mean by buffers. I know that could be many numbers of things, trees, walls, things like that. And that leads into my third question, which is I have a lot of concern about some of the open space parks that I see around and also that were shown in the images up here, because they seem to be chopped up a lot with a lot of concrete. So if your buffers are going to be walls, I think we need to get into that a little more, because I really don't want to see an open space park that so much of it is concrete. Now, I know there's ADA issues and so forth and so on, but I think a park can be made creatively and beautifully, but I don't see a whole lot of that happening in the city. And I don't know why. There's a lot of creativity elsewhere. I think we can get more creative with our parks and eliminate a lot of concrete.
Can I be trusted with the microphone?
Yeah.
Okay. And do I get equal time with Carolyn?
No.
Okay. Anyway, housing. One item that or subject that you haven't talked about is ownership. And I would like to suggest that it be a lease as opposed to a sale to the private developers. Once again, the very first meeting I went to, I talked about the example of the Old Hall of Justice in Chinatown Financial District and how it got sold to the what's now the Hilton Hotel. And I don't want to see a private developer take advantage of public assets. Regarding urban design and the existing setting, just as a point of information, the Balboa Park Station area plan had already changed the height limits. I forget what it was originally, but it got increased to 45X. And then what you're proposing is another increase to 65 up to 85. Just a point of information. Regarding transportation, the TDM is being put out as a solution to our problems in terms of parking and transportation. The problem with the TDM, it's funded by SFCTA, and the problem with the TDM is the scope of the TDM. And what the scope of the TDM is, very simply, reducing single occupancy vehicle use. It doesn't talk about talk about parking at all. And you can correct me if I'm wrong. And finally, and I don't have it with me, but okay.
Thank you. Buenas noches, mi nombre es María Elena Ramos.
Good evening, my name is María Elena Ramos.
Pertenezco a Poder.
And I belong to the organization called Poder.
Y nosotros tenemos una organización también dentro de Poder que se llama un programa Pueblote. Tenemos un programa que se llama Pueblote.
We also have a program within Poder called Pueblote.
La idea es luchar para que todas las personas de las minorías tengan una vivienda asequible.
And so our purpose in this organization is for all of minorities to have affordable housing.
Mi esposo es ciudadano y vive aquí desde los 28, tiene 28 años de vivir en San Francisco.
So my husband is a citizen and he's been living in San Francisco for 28 years.
Mi caso es el mismo y mi hijo tiene 11 años. Tenemos una abuelita de 84 años disability.
It's the same with me and my son is 11 years old and we also have a daughter that's disabled.
Con mucha tristeza he visto cómo muchas amistades mías y mucha gente conocida se ha ido a vivir fuera de San Francisco. Es lamentable. Es lamentable ver cómo muchas amistades de nosotros y cómo familiares y otras personas que apoyan a San Francisco se tienen que vivir lejos de San Francisco.
It's really sad to see all of families and friends to be loving San Francisco so much but having to move out.
En dos ocasiones hemos estado a punto de irnos de San Francisco por lo caro de la renta.
On two different occasions we were having to move out of San Francisco twice because of the prices.
Pero estamos en una línea fina, mi esposo y yo. Ni somos muy pobres, ni somos nada ricos.
But, you know, we're right on that line, my husband and I, because we're not, like, poor, but we're not rich either.
Y entonces nunca calificamos en ningún proyecto de vivienda.
So we never really qualify for any kind of assistance for housing.
Es muy difícil vivir con una persona disability sin mucho espacio ni siquiera para estirar sus brazos.
And it's also very difficult to be living with somebody that's disabled to the extent where that they can't even extend their arms outward.
Y que un niño de 11 años o de menos edad, como es el caso de mi comunidad hispana, no tengan espacio ni para estudiar dentro de donde viven.
And also, you know, for young children, you know, in this case, my child is 11 years old, it doesn't even have enough space to, say, you know, go about his studies.
Es una lástima oír que estos proyectos están adecuados al valor del mercado.
And so it's almost sad to hear about how these projects are based on this, you know, fair market value.
Cuando la realidad debería de ser que estén adecuados a la realidad de los que vivimos en San Francisco.
When the reality should be based on the residents that live here in the city of San Francisco.
Por eso nuestra demanda en este momento es que el 100% de la vivienda sea económica.
And so that's why what we're demanding having to be 100% based on that.
El 33% de la vivienda para gente de muy bajos recursos.
And 33% for the low income housing.
Para personas de $56,000 con una familia de cuatro.
So we're looking at a family of $56,000 for a family of four.
El 23% para viviendas de gente de bajos ingresos.
And so this is also, we're asking for 33% of living for people with low income, and that's $81,000 per family of four.
Y el otro 33% para viviendas de gente de ingresos moderados.
And so the final 33% would be for people of moderate income, which is $122,000.
Esa es nuestra realidad. Eso es lo que yo he estudiado desde que vine a San Francisco.
That's our reality. That's what I've been studying since I got here in San Francisco.
He participado en cantidad de foros. Yo sé lo que nuestra gente está viviendo. Lo que ustedes están hablando no es realidad.
I have participated in many forums, and what you people are talking about isn't reality.
Deberíamos de poner los pies sobre la tierra todos y dejar de pensar en un mercado que no existe.
So let's put our feet on the floor and stop thinking about this market that doesn't even exist.
Y agradezco la oportunidad.
And thank you for the opportunity.
Good evening, everyone. My name is Charlie Chamas. I'm a resident of the Excelsior. I'm also with Bovet and a community alliance called Communities United for Health and Justice. So this evening, we've heard from city officials that have told us that the current formula of 33% affordable housing, with roughly half of that for very low income and half for moderate income, is the best that we can hope for. When we talk to community members, they ask, how is it possible that publicly owned land, in the midst of the city's worst housing crisis that is displacing very low, and moderate income San Franciscans, that we're not doing our very best to create new affordable housing opportunities for nonprofit workers, teachers, house cleaners, construction workers, students, caregivers, the list goes on, none of whom can afford market rate prices. So we got a second opinion. We reached out to affordable housing developers, the Council of Community Housing Organizations, who day in and day out are doing their best to create solutions for more affordability. They shared their best thinking, given the opportunities and constraints of the Balboa Reservoir, and what we learned wasn't surprising. They confirmed that the current housing parameter, number one, that requires only 33% affordable housing, which means 67% market rate housing, is in fact the most conservative of a wide range of scenarios that could include up to 67% affordable housing, all the way up to 100% affordable housing. All of it is possible and feasible. If the affordable housing developers are saying it's possible, then why aren't we doing our very best to achieve it? The RFP that the city developed should clearly set the standard high, not low, given that many of the likely bidders will be market rate developers, and they're interested in maximizing their own profit, not necessarily addressing the welfare of neighbors, families, students, teachers. I also want to express our support to the needs of the City College community. We believe strongly that this project must be accountable not only to the working families of the South Side, but also the students and teachers who have spoken clearly about the need for a performing arts center and for parking that serves the needs of working students. Thank you.
Hi, my name is Lily. I'm the program manager for the Communities United for Health and Justice, and I'm here to talk about the item on affordable housing. So you heard from Charlie about CUHJ's stance. We did survey, as I mentioned last time, 310 people all over this area, and there was a high wish and want for affordable housing. I know that in conversations about the Balboa Reservoir, you're comparing it to Proposition K, but again, it's not subject to Proposition K. So what I don't understand is why we're using that as the floor or the ceiling when it should be the floor of affordable housing in this area. And 33% just isn't enough. When we surveyed the community, 74% of people that we talked to were interested in affordable housing for people making $29,000 or less annually. If you compare it to what's being talked about right now, at 120%, which they're looking at about 18% of that 33, a single person would be making $85,000 and a family of four would be making $120,000 annually. And that's not consistent with what the community is looking for. If you're looking at San Francisco as a whole, we don't have that many people that are kind of in that middle range of income. Usually you would think that income range is kind of a curve that goes upward and then down, so not that many people having very low income, not that many people having very high income. San Francisco is actually a U-shape, where we have a lot of people that are very, very low income, and we have a good amount of people that are very high income. But there's actually a little dip in that area where we would be talking about this moderate income range. Thank you.
Again, I was just asked, please don't clap, and the reason not to clap is that it's about being fair and equitable to every speaker, because if you're somebody who you say something and no one claps for what you say, that may not make you feel so great. So it's just about creating equity for everybody who speaks. Thank you.
Equitable clapping.
Yes. Good evening. My name is Peter Cullen, and I'm co-director of the Council of Community Housing Organizations. I think you heard Charlie refer to us earlier, and my co-director, Fernanda Marti, and I will kind of tag team here. We have a short paper we submitted to you folks earlier electronically, and we have some paper copies if you like them. I think we might even have some extras for the audience, depending on the CSC members. I'll give a very brief overview and then turn over to Fernando, but I do have a few specific comments on your draft housing parameters I want to get to first. On principle number one, this is very much into the details, but it matters a lot. Using these income targets of AMI, area median income, it's important to remember that the area median income is average for San Mateo, Marin, and San Francisco County. So we're averaging very, very high income counties. What we really should be doing is adjusting those for San Francisco incomes, which is typically about 10% less than those three county averages. So where it says, you know, set these for AMI levels, it should say San Francisco incomes, and we can work with staff on that, but it's a very important detail to make this affordable. The second is on principle two around family-friendly units. It's good that you put that in there. I think, though, it's still very abstract. You need to define what is a minimum size for a family-friendly unit. That can be all over the map. Market rate developers are building very small two-bedroom units. So in affordable housing, we have very specific minimum unit sizes, and I suggest you use those as your standard. The other thing is two bedrooms isn't always enough. I mean, I've got two kids, and I can tell you, a brother and sister, they're not going to share a room at some point. In fact, they've already militated against that. So if you want folks three-bedroom units, you need to specify that in the parameters of your RFP to get at least some minimum threes as well as twos. And lastly, on principle number three, I just take issue with the idea that it's about the undersupply of housing. To be very specific, the undersupply is housing that's affordable to low, moderate, middle-income folks. So that would be my key thing. And I'm going to turn over to Fernando, who talked about the scenarios that were referenced earlier in our paper.
Thank you again. My name is Fernando Mati with the Council of Community Housing Organizations. I passed out a short piece that we had sent to you electronically. On page four, we look at what different income levels are, and Lily and Charlie both talked about what low-income units are, what moderate income, what middle income, as we are defining them, as a range of income levels that really represent the working families of the Southeast. For comparison, I just went online. I typed in Avalon Communities, Ocean Avenue, and up pops what the market rate is producing in this neighborhood. A market rate, one bedroom or studio at Avalon right now, today being advertised, a 500 square foot unit, goes for $3,000 a month. If you convert that to one third of someone's salary, you would have to earn $120,000 for that to be an affordable unit. So in other words, our market rate is providing for 170% of the area median income in this neighborhood. Is that what we need to be providing public sources, public land, to be subsidizing units for folks who make 170% of median income? That is up to you. And I think that these are the questions that we hope you will address in the RFP and be very specific. Do you want 66% of the units that get built here to be affordable to people who make more than 170% of median income? What we put on the last page is a series of potential scenarios that we think would be very important for you all to look at and analyze before you put this before a developer who will go for, we know, the minimum that they are required. If you say the minimum is going to be 33% and then your principal 1A said, or 1C says maximize affordability, they're going to go for that 15% low income that is the minimum. We were recently involved in the negotiations around Prop D with the Giants. The only reason why the Giants even listened to us is they had not yet signed an exclusive negotiating agreement. You need to make these decisions before an EMA goes into place.
My name is Maureen, I'm Elizabeth Park. My understanding of this was the middle class was the unit that wasn't hit with the target zone. The lower was being provided for in numerous ways. Upper obviously doesn't need any help, but this was specifically built for the middle class, and also that the income level was pegged to the district, not to the South Bay. My concern is about the density of the potential project, and I have a sustainable housing map here that if we're looking at upward of 1,000 units, it seems like we're getting into more of a market rate zone, which I think everyone in this neighborhood appreciates what we have and moved here because we did not want to live in the central business district.
Hello, my name is Jonathan Randolph, and I'd like to put this into a greater context. In San Francisco, the working class and middle class are an endangered species. If current trends continue, they are being displaced more and more, and in a generation, basically, San Francisco will be a gated community for the rich. It will be an exclusive city. What's the cause of this? This has been, by the way, this has been covered in many newspapers, you know, you can read it everywhere. What's the cause of this? If you ask the experts, all of them say that it's because we haven't been building enough housing. David Campos's legislative analyst report says that San Francisco should have been building much more housing in order to be as affordable as the rest of California. The White House says that San Francisco in particular, should be building more housing. These experts basically say that the quantity of housing is more important than the percentage that's affordable. I mean, than the percentage that's allocated via lottery. I'm sorry to disagree with the CHO people earlier. And if we want to preserve the middle class, my opinion is we need to allocate more land for more housing. So therefore, I would like to, in the urban design parameters, in principle 2, I'd like to clarify that housing is a community benefit. And if the developer can offer more housing, then I would be willing to offer them more height, up to and in excess of 85 feet. And 85 feet, by the way, is not that much. You know, if you look at the Berkeley dorms, I think that's it's a little bit more than 85 feet over there, and it's next to, it's nearby single family homes, it's not that bad. And it provides affordability to the students there, and we need affordability here in San Francisco as well. Thank you.
I'm Madeline Mueller, I teach at City College Music. I can't remember which of these groups I asked this question, but maybe you guys have the answer online, I haven't seen it, but I have been asking the question in various venues, how many empty units do we have in San Francisco? I've seen documentaries on land speculation, which drives up both prices and need, and gets a lot of profit tearing going on, especially from money that's coming in out of the country into the Bay Area in particular. So I don't know if that data is out there. I think I've asked you guys, but I don't know if I did. If I didn't, I'm asking now. How many units do we have? When we did this exercise 30 years ago, it's deja vu all over, we took care of 200 units of housing rather than the plan. And we're promised that we'll never be this again. And that's why we kind of distrust some of the this is what's going to happen because it's come around. But that too was a created crisis by empty units in this city and on this peninsula. So I think we have to have that data. We just have to before we trust. And the specific things on the units, there'll be a lot more about City College, you said, next time, but there's still a pretty strong language about sharing, the sharing parking. which I thought everybody said was just not going to work for the residents, certainly not for the students, and it really assumes that there will be no night school, there will be no community college. I don't think that should be assumed. And the other is, if I read it right, that the transportation studies will try to get a 60% goal of people not using cars. 30 years ago, when we did the data for the same issue, 40% of the students were in their cars. So we've more than met that already, I bet.
Hi, Chris Hansen, Excelsior. So on the front page of all of these, I think one of them it wasn't on there, Emily's letter. I would like to see where it says, based on this feedback, I would like to see selectively based on this feedback. And I think that's kind of a lot of what you guys are hearing tonight. There are a lot of things that just don't fit into parameters because they are diametrically opposed to the parameters. For example, on public realm, a daily experience for diverse neighbors. I would say because this site provides vital parking, continue that use. And we've heard it over and over and over again. They're on the open space part. There's nothing that says this land is now, as far as I know, zoned open space. And I think that's an important detail. There's nothing on the, as far as with the SFPUC and the presentation about them getting fair market value. I mean, as AJ said, why should a private developer take advantage of public assets? And I know that City College's stuff is sort of in the City College bundle, but I think throughout, in almost, you know, I'm looking at incorporate different needs, and there's nothing that says parking is needed and will continue to be needed for City College. Under express neighborhood character, urban design, provide parking for the future Performing Arts Center. I mean, these things could be included, but they are, it feels selectively not included. Thank you.
And this is going to be the last, this stuff goes out one. Our last call of the night, and then we're going to adjourn.
Thank you.
I'm sorry, I have to make a comment.
Okay. Kishan Balgavin, Westwood Park. It's interesting to see all the different perspectives, and it's very complex, it's a balancing act, and at the end, some of us will win some of us won't. I personally have been a little saddened by the process. I think, you know, we've spent a lot of time looking at parameters, learning a lot about the process, and we've come up with recommendations or thoughts around it, and it's sad to see that a lot of the recommendations that Westwood Park has provided was not included. So I know Linda has submitted some documents to you guys. It would be nice to see if you can, at least offline, give some feedback on why you were not included. More specifically to housing, as many of us have said today, and I hope that gets taken into account, 853 is a lot for this neighborhood. I personally don't think that this neighborhood can take 8-9-story housing buildings, skyscrapers. It is way too much. I would like to see language in the parameters that go and say no more than, maybe no more than 25 feet, 30 feet on the west side, and no more than X amount of feet on the east side. And I don't know what kind of benefits are going to be provided, but I don't think anything is going to be worth adding 85 feet buildings.
Okay, so I'm going to turn it over to Kate, and then we're going to adjourn.
Okay, and as a representative of Woodland Park on the UCAC, I have a number of principles that need to be addressed with regard. Some of them have already been addressed, but I just want to again reiterate the position of the Westwood Park that any RMP include provisions on the city's legal responsibility to take Westwood Park residential character into account. and that reasonable and appropriate space and distance between resident backyards and the new development or open space boarding perimeter are ensured. Large open spaces and walking trails, I'd go for 5 or 6 acres, I don't know, that's right, but okay, more than at least 2 acres for the park. Private owner backyards are programmed and preserved in the space between Plymouth Avenue and homeowners' backyards and the western edge of the reservoir development, that any proposed multi-story housing be developed on the eastern side of the reservoir. I think you've already addressed this, but there would be no towering developments going looking over the backyards of any adjacent, particularly Westwood Park. And we had the 10-year community process that resulted in the Balboa Station Area Plan, and that was a 40-foot height restriction measured from the bed of the reservoir. That's what the position of Westwood Park is. That the earth berm on the west side of the reservoir, which provides a reasonable amount of buffer between the Plymouth Avenue and the proposed development, be preserved and beautified. To provide adequate and seamless access to an egress using Lee and Brighton, consistent with recommendations available in Park Area Plan, again, to incorporate that as part of the community. And real important, but a small detail that we really haven't talked about is that to assure that the construction of earth-moving activities during the construction of the site on the east side of Plymouth Avenue be carefully considered with regard to the elder homes that are on that side during the Avalon Bay apartment development and other developments nearby. There have been some cracks that have resulted, and we want to make sure there's some assurances within that RFP. Anyway, thank you.
Great. Thank you, Kate. So I think, so thank you everyone for your comments and for your thoughtful feedback. I'm gonna say that I'm saddened that you're sad about the process because I think we've been trying our very best to really hear people and hear the feedback. And so I think one of the things that I'm going to charge my colleagues to do is to take the materials we've received to do some really thoughtful review of them so that when we come back next time, we'll start off with our reactions and our recommendations as your representatives. And I think I just want to also underscore the importance of the notion of, I think, our second last speaker about we'll have some will win, some will lose. I think this notion of consensus and what's something that we can put together that we can all feel really good about. And I'm sorry and I'm disappointed that many of you feel disappointed in the process because that's not the intention. And for us as volunteers, that's clearly not why we're doing what we're doing. So our next meeting will be February 8th. We will come back and we will start off with the part B of this, which is our response. And then, like we did tonight, we'll have a chance to reveal. Again, the principles will be online, the parameters, the remaining three that we need to cover, and we'll be able to take feedback for those as well. Okay, so February 8th is our next meeting. And then at that meeting, we will then determine additional, what the go-forward strategy is going to be, if we're going to need more meetings. We'll have a general comment period as well at the next meeting, so if people weren't here to comment on the four that were covered tonight, we'll make sure to cover that as well. And thank you all for your time and your commitment. Thank you.
Is there a deadline for when we can get the comments and we can make any
When?
4 days?
How long? Next couple of days? Within a week?
Within 1 week, they read the material.
Oh, we circulated.
Yeah, anytime before they circulated, we get them to the CAC. So
if we didn't get you 15 minutes to be more specific,
I'm assuming you get them
to the CAC. But anytime before the next meeting?
Yeah.
Oh, yeah.
The more time they have to digest it, the better.
More time they have to digest
it. But there's no deadline.
Okay.
I saw this in the last time.
Yes. Provide the affordable housing and everything else that goes along with it. But I mean, here we are, it's like we saw the future. We knew what it was going to be. I knew that the or not yet, make it on your list. And I can guarantee from here on out, it'll be exactly the same. And if you want, we could bet.
But what does that do?